How's your pepperoni?
Good. I ran out and then I picked up some peanuts. So that's my dinner.
Dude, you gotta eat healthier.
Yeah, but, you know, it was available. It was ready to go. Didn't have to make anything, heat anything up.
Probably got some squirrels outside, too. You could eat, you know.
I've got squirrels on my walls, Mike. If I want, I just have to punch
them
in the drywall.
Oh, my God.
We have starlings now. We have starlings that are using the holes that the squirrels chewed into our gutters as their place to reside now, which is really annoying. They get really noisy during a certain hour of the day. It's like just as the sun is starting to set, they start squawking.
You live in a life of destitution.
You're really living the life.
Slumming it.
Mike, if you dropped your toothbrush on the bathroom floor, do you pick it up and wash it off, or do you run to the store to buy a new one?
I would rinse it off in the sink. I'd probably just keep using it. If it depends how it landed.
It landed bristles down.
Oh, well, I'd have to rinse it off then, because it's probably already wet and or has toothpaste on it.
Oh, yeah. Do you put new toothpaste on?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'd have to rinse it off first.
But, I mean, are you rinsing it, like, hard enough to get all the toothpaste off, or just, like, a, you know, just, oh,
you
yeah,
know,
quick
you,
rinse.
You put it under the water, quick and splash. You just kind of give it that you use your thumb, and you go sprishy, 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 and then you look at it, you flick it a couple times, and then it's fine. It's fine.
That's my new ringtone.
What? Sprishy, sprishy, sprishy?
Yeah, thanks for the second take.
Yeah, just in case. You can stitch that together.
How you been?
Put that against the Skype ringtone. That's great. I've been good. Fucking cook risotto again tonight. Because I hate myself.
And I'm living the life of destitution?
What's wrong with risotto?
I don't know. Nothing. But you seem to have it a lot.
It's because we do that home chef thing. This is not a paid advertisement. We do that, and Aaron is nice enough to eat vegetarian with me, because I don't really like to cook meat, and I don't eat meat, so, you know, she does the vegetarian recipes, but they only do, like, 3 vegetarian recipes a week, and for the past 3 weeks, they've just sent us risotto, which is just the most boring. I mean, it's not boring, because, like, last week, it was, like, sweet potato with risotto, and this week it's like Brussels sprouts and brown butter and parsley. It's like, it's all very good and varied enough in its meal, but it's just, risotto is such a consuming meal to cook, because you just sit there and you got to keep it moving so it doesn't stick to the bottom of the pan. And then you got to add a little bit more broth, and then you got to scrape it, and then you got to pour a little bit more broth, and then you got to wait for that to go down, like another 4 minutes. And it's all in the hope that it just get soft eventually. There's an oven way to do it too, and I've tried that before with like some like ready-made risotto mix, and it's fine. But this one is not that, and you have this dry ass rice, you just toss in the pot, and 45 minutes later you might be done.
Is it tasty?
It's good. Yeah, I mean, it's risotto. It's like cheese, and it's like, that's the thing is with the home chef stuff, it's like you're getting pasta, a flatbread, which is like their version of pizza, which is just a piece of naan with whatever they want you to put on top of it. And so pasta that, and a rice dish with tofu. That's what you get week after week. And it's fine because I'm vegetarian, so you can't expect them to have crazy options.
Right.
But it's usually going to be rice dish with tofu, pasta, flatbread. That will be your week.
That sounds pretty good to me.
It's delicious. I'm not going to lie. It's a delicious three hitter, but it's just every week, like, okay, what flatbread is this week? And then they just, and the pasta dish this week, they actually gave me spaghetti and a risotto dish, which is basically the rice dish, I know, but it doesn't feel like a rice dish because you're mixing in like a half a cup of Parmesan and like butter, and it's delicious, but it's a lot of pasta.
Yeah, this sounds pretty good.
Sorry, I'm making you hungry. I'm not doing you any favors here.
Yeah. All week I've been craving pizza rolls.
Oh, man. We got to do something about your eating habits, man.
The other day, for lunch, I got a two-pack of mozzarella cheese, like string cheese, but they were wrapped each with a piece of salami. like, that's an innovation.
That's a salami magic almost.
It was pretty good. I mean, the salami, it wasn't tacked on to the cheese in any way. It wasn't really attached in any sort of fashion. The only thing keeping it together was the fact that it was in the packaging. So basically, as soon as I opened up the packaging, the salami just started to unroll, which is really awkward because I'm sitting on this little like waiting room sofa looking thing in the middle of my school building, and I'm fumbling with my salami. And then you just have to eat salami and cheese with your hands, which is a little weird. But it was good. It was a good lunch. I gave up the sandwiches, as I told you, those nasty pre-made sandwiches. I'm done with those. So,
oh, thank
I'm
you.
Trying to find that, an alternate.
You're doing yourself a favor. You're doing listeners a favor and me a favor by not eating that trash.
Yeah. Well, I was totally fine with everything about the sandwiches. You know, the fact that they're mostly bread. The fact that the lettuce that they're using may or may not have been contaminated with E. coli.
Oh, yeah. For sure. You got like a 98% chance of E. coli in those sammies.
I put up with a lot with those sandwiches until they started getting soggy. Once they stopped shipping them in the little plastic container and started shipping them in plastic instead, that was it. I was done.
Wait, like plastic wrap versus plastic like hard shell?
Yeah. And in the hard shell, it came with nice like bamboo skewer to keep it all together. It came with its own package of Italian dressing. All of that went away. All the accoutrements disappeared when they started plastic wrapping it, and they're disgusting.
Times are tough at the sandwich company that packages for your school, man.
Yeah.
You got to cut back on those bamboo things. Can't be holding those sandwiches together anymore. This is the 21st century.
Yeah. Oh, and they put the nasty banana peppers on there. So that was it.
Oh, that's a sin. Mm-hmm. No, you can't do that. Banana peppers are like... That's such a like, oh, do you want this? That's like you asking a sandwich shop if you want that. I've made that mistake once on tour. You know, you live off a Subway when you're on tour because it's at every Walmart that you're sleeping in the parking lot of. Mm-hmm. And it's only $5 for like, you know, a foot of bread, basically.
Enough that's to tide you over until you stop at the next Subway.
Or if you can really ration it out, you know, I mean, yeah, ideally you're going to be stopping it. So you're going to get a sandwich in the morning and then get a sandwich in the night and you only spent $10 for the day. You can also grocery shop in that Walmart too if it's a super Walmart. This has been many years since I've done this, so I'm sure the touring diet has changed a little bit.
It's all Hopefully Chipotle better. Now.
Yeah, well, oh man, we tried. That's one of the most embarrassing times in my life in front of my friends. We were in the van. Mm-hmm. We had heard rumors of another band on the tour. I think they're called Phone Calls from Home, possibly.
That sounds right.
And they had successfully called up a Chipotle and set up like a meet and greet with posters and free food somehow. And so they kind of like this, there's six other people in this van, you know, with me. And they somehow pinned it on me to call up Chipotle and pretend to be a manager. And I, for some reason, decided an English accent would be the appropriate way that a manager from Atlantic Records would speak. And it was just a shit accent, just like a terrible attempt at an English accent. And I spoke with a manager at Chipotle and was just like, I'm going to spare you all the accent and not do it again. But I was like, listen, we have like, I'm my name is whatever with Atlantic Records. And I have this band on the road and I'm wondering if I can set up a meet and greet. And I just kept saying that I was from Atlantic Records over and over again, as if it made a difference. And the girl's like, the woman's like, no, corporate would have told us if they wanted us to do an event. And like, and she really was not having it. And everybody's just sitting there watching me and I can't just stop or hang up because that would for some reason be more embarrassing to do that. So I just keep this phone call going for probably, it seemed like 30 minutes, but it was probably more like 3 or 4 because you know, this is as long as it takes for someone to say, no, we're not having you in. And I think we might have had the gall to even show up and just buy food after that Chipotle because we'd use somebody's iPhone 3GS or something just to map it out or like Google. So somebody had like Wi-Fi on the go, like a hotspot that they would just see where the nearest Chipotle was on our route. And we would just, it was really bad.
You did way more than you needed to though.
Like, yes, I know. I realize that now. How many years? That was 2010. So yeah, we're almost 10 years removed from that. Damn, 10 years ago.
That's, 10 years of Chipotle. Oh,
yeah.
I think I had Chipotle for the first time in either 2010 or 2011.
Yeah, that sounds about right for me. too. I did way too much. You're right. It was terrible. But I just had to keep going with it because, like, for some reason, backing down would have been worse than embarrassing myself further by being told no in different ways. I don't even know how the phone call could have ended. It must have just been like, well, okay. And she was like, okay, goodbye. I'm like, well, fine.
That's so sad. Because it's not a hidden secret, really. I don't think, if you're anywhere in the music industry. Like, Chipotle gives away free food to bands, at least in a lot of locations. I don't know if they have a company policy. They don't really sponsor artists or anything, but they will give free vouchers to bands coming through if they have them available. Or I've heard in some cases that bands will get free stuff based on CDs. They just give the manager a CD and food's free.
That's probably I imagine if we had just showed up in person and I had just been a real person, not Mick Johnson or whatever name I made up from Atlantic Records, the 22-year-old English man.
Named Mick.
Oh, man. But I mean, I wasn't playing 22. I was playing, I think in my head I was 45 or something like that.
I would have given you too. A bag of chips and some guac just for trying.
No, you would have done the same thing because if I had just been honest and asked nicely about something, then it would have gone a lot further than me trying to pull one over on someone, which was totally not asked for me. I accept full responsibility for this in my idiocy. Hmm. You know, it was a really, really bad effort on my part, but I hope it was at least entertaining. I don't even think it was that.
Yeah, probably not.
No. Probably not. It was bad.
How do we get on this? How do we get on Chipotle?
You just said, you said the word Chipotle, eating on tour, footlongs, banana peppers. That's where we're at. We heard banana peppers.
Work our way back to banana peppers. Nasty, nasty things.
Well, I mean, someone just put it on my sub at Walmart at Subway, and it ruined my sub for the day. So that's really all there is to say about that. And
No, banana peppers, you're right, those should be a thing that you ask for. It should never be a given that you want banana peppers.
It's like almost like onions, I think. Like, they ask about onions, they ask about banana peppers, they ask about jalapenos. Those are things that should never just be on a sandwich unless it's explicitly stated on a menu, this is the banana pepper sandwich or whatever, you know. And you can say, hold the banana peppers.
I mean, I'll put onion on anything, but banana peppers, jalapenos.
You're a sociopath. You said that a couple weeks ago. You're like, I just eat onions and then just go interact with human beings. And I'm like, no, you need to hide out. that's what you said. That's pretty much what you said 3 weeks ago. Rewind that, you know. Somebody play that back. Joe, let me get that clip. Play it. Okay.
We need a producer.
Yeah, what's the guy from the Joe Rogan podcast?
He just says, never listen.
Jamie. It's Jamie. He's just, Jamie, put that up on the monitor. Hey, Jamie, bring that up. I'm just going to talk to Jamie as if he's here. But no, the fact that you would eat onions and not hide yourself away for at least 3 days afterwards is bizarre to me. I eat onions on a Friday if I'm not working till Monday.
You schedule it out.
Oh, yeah, man. You gotta plan it.
No, I put it on everything. I think it really depends on the onion. Like a red onion, that's a nasty lingering surprise for the person that you're talking to.
Any uncooked onion is going to be terrible.
Yeah, it's definitely worse when it's uncooked, but I don't know. I usually will get, at least at Subway sandwiches, I will have them toast my sandwich. I guess they probably don't put the onions on first, do they?
I wonder how much Subway would charge you to just put cheese on one of those big rolls.
Just get a big garlic bread?
Yeah, a grilled cheese, you know? Oh, man. Have you ever tried their pizza?
No.
There's this, do you know Scott Wiener? Have we talked about him before? Mm. He's the pizza guru of probably the world, if not America, if not the world, but he's on the Food Network all the time. When I moved to New York, my second apartment, he was leaving the apartment and I was, he was going and I was coming. And, you know, I showed up and he told me who he was. And I learned that he like gives the pizza tours in New York City. And we had we had like two run-ins after that in the city. Mm-hmm. But he, you know, his job is to literally go to every pizzeria he can find in the world and try their pizza. And he will comment on some of them he doesn't. But he's like, all right, I finally caved and did. I went and got the Subway pizza. And it was the worst pizza he'd ever had in his life. It was atrocious.
I can only imagine that it's equivalent to soggy cardboard, probably in a square. I bet it comes in like a square or something because it's more economical to ship.
I think
you know
everything's
coming pre-made.
It's round. I bet it's like a sheet of like, you know, whatever you call it, like focaccia or something, like, you know, but you have to punch it out of like a sheet. You just punch it. It's like you kind of have this little circular cutting.
Yeah.
So it was cheaper to engineer like a $10,000 cutting machine that can just make a small, like 6-inch circle.
Yeah. Oh, no, I probably wouldn't try that. We used to get Subway on occasion because it was like a fast food place that May and I could both go to and get something from. But honestly, we haven't been there in a while. Like, it's been a long time. We usually go when we travel. Like, it's a good place to go when we travel because, you know, you don't have time to go somewhere else. You don't want to spend extra money. So Subway is like a quick option, but
yeah. Fully. It's like when you got nothing else.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I tried
the
avocado.
Some are way better than the other. Like, I've been to some pretty nasty Subways. The kind that, like, make you feel dirty just being there. But I've been to some really nice ones where they keep everything really clean and they don't skimp.
The least a restaurant can do.
Like,
that is the absolute least a restaurant can do, is keep their shit clean. Besides having food, number one on the list if you want to be a restaurant.
I've been to some Subways that run out of food.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think, you know, of the like 5 or 6 different Subways that we have in my small Midwestern town, the cleanest one is the one that's in the newest gas station. And, you know, who knows how long it's going to last that way. But at least right now, they have like a really nice, clean joint that they want to keep that way. And so as long as they do, I'm going to go to them over the places that might be closer.
Oh, dude. I don't even want to think about what the second most clean one is, like what the bar is set if it's a gas station Subway.
Yeah. Well, there's the one in the Walmart, which is usually kind of, it's okay, but it's...
Yeah. Is Walmart ever like dirty? You know, like...
Mm.
I feel like it's the people that make the Walmart, you know?
It is. So it's kind of hard to... It's hard to look at the Walmart itself through the people in the Walmart.
What?
It's hard to see the forest for the trees. You know, like, you see all the people, and you're so busy, like, looking at them, and, like, they're wiping their nostrils on their sleeves, and...
Wearing thongs in public.
Doing all sorts of like, weird stuff. But yeah, you don't really look at the Walmart. I don't know. I wouldn't say that Walmart is like clean. I certainly wouldn't eat anything that I dropped on the floor there. I wouldn't use the toothbrush if I had to brush my teeth there, which I've done.
Oh, man. Oh, of course. I mean, if you're living in their parking lot, you must use their bathroom
right.
In the morning. You would take a baby wipe shower in the morning. You have the baby wipes in the bathroom, and you're just shirtless in their bathroom, toweling yourself off with your Dob kit in front of you. Mm-hmm. Shoppers will walk in, and they will look at you like you are homeless, which you are. So,
did you ever have like a manager yell at you for that? Because I've definitely had one give me like a weird look. Like, I know that you slept in the parking lot because I drove past you on my way in this morning, and here you are. You probably have a toothbrush in that hoodie pocket of yours. I'm not going to follow you, but I'm going to give you the stink eye.
We've definitely been told to move on before by somebody in the parking lot, like a parking lot cop with in their like little cart, in their little go-kart. They came around.
They have no authority over you.
I mean, they can call the cops who have the authority over us, and we don't. And we never were doing anything like illicit.
They can't. They have to go to their manager for approval first.
I think they probably have jurisdiction to call the cops. I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, when we were talking about the manager following you around and being weird, I will say the illicit things that happened were by some of the band members was petty theft, and I stress the word petty because I don't think any of us need really. I mean, none of us were making money.
Mm-hmm.
I never stole, but I definitely was witness to stealing, and I was witness to them getting caught as being like stolen. Like they would, you know, someone would just need a pair of headphones or something like that, like, and earbuds. I'm not even talking like nice Beats or over the ears or anything. Just like, they just grab a pair of crappy wired headphones, and he would be walking through the aisle and tear the packaging off kind of while he was moving. Just like trying to hide it while he was, you know, moving, and he would ditch the packaging, and, you know, as he's getting towards the door, someone would just be like, no, you have to stop. Like you like, come here. And he does stop. Mm-hmm. And the cops are on their way. You know, he says the cops are on their way, and they take him to a room, and they kind of basically like, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this? And sometimes they got off, but sometimes they didn't, you know, like, ugh. Sam did not get off, and he has a lifetime ban from Walmart now. I'm not joking. If he shows up at a Walmart, he can probably be, the cops will come and
do something. Okay, so he could, theoretically, but how could they ever possibly?
Well, he definitely went in after. Like, I mean, I don't know how long it took him to start going into Walmart again. It might have been faster or whatever, but he literally had, I mean, he was pulled into an interrogation room or whatever they call it, the VIP room or something. And I think, oh man, I'm going to text him right now, but he got away. Like he was like just eating. He was eating a thing of chicken nuggets, or something like that.
And frozen nuggets?
No, he ditched the pack. So from the ready-made food section, he grabbed like a ready-made case from the hot section, the hot plate or whatever, of chicken nuggets, and he had ditched the packaging somewhere, because that's the signature move, is ditching the packaging somewhere. Mm-hmm. When you think they're not watching, they're absolutely watching. They're tracking you from the moment you're walking in there, because you look like a homeless person. It's just there to steal, you know, like you're a band person. You look out of place. You're wearing jorts and a jacket, you know, like it doesn't make sense.
And with the bands jorts that you're touring with, they probably had some kind of funny mustache, right?
Yes, Sam had a full handlebar mustache and long hair at the time, wearing a jacket, jorts, and Converse. It's probably 30 degrees outside. Oh man, I'm texting Sam right now. What movies did you get away with? Let me clarify. What DVDs did you get away with?
Like Knights and Rodanthe.
Well, that's the thing, is they pulled him into this room and they told him, you know, like they basically like, you have a lifetime ban from Walmart now. They took his picture, I think. And he still got away, because in his back pocket he still had two DVDs, and he got away with it. They didn't take it. They didn't confiscate him. Like, I don't think he had to pay for. I think he might have had to pay for the chicken or whatever it was that he got caught for. Just like the other guy got, right. He had to pay for the headphones that they took him for. And he said as he was leaving the store, the cops pulled up and the guy cut him loose. Like before the cops could be like, what's up, to the manager or security guy, he cut him loose. And the guy, the band member, said that it was fine. He was like, yeah, I was just honest with him. I was like, listen, I'm in a touring band and I don't have a lot of money, and I'm sorry. I thought this is the right thing to do. I won't do it again. You have my word. And you know, they just talked to like two people, and the guy cut him loose. So like, someone has the authority to call the cops.
You make it sound like it was
cops.
So reasonable, but he still left the building with merchandise that he did
paid
for.
Well, Sam left it. I'm happy to call Sam out for getting away, because I think he might be proud of that. I don't know. Probably not, looking back on it, because it's a different time in your life when you're literally living on the road, you know, 7 months out of the year in a van. He would sleep in the trailer. Oh, man. A lot of good tour stories that just don't come off good when you actually tell them out loud to people who weren't there. It's like a lot of things in life. It's like tour stories are just perpetually you had to be there stories.
Have I ever told you about my experience with the Walmart task force, their undercover security?
Oh, please. Team. I need some Walmart story coming from you now.
All right. So when I worked in retail, we had a guy that would come in on occasion. And I mean, he came in from like the day we opened, I think he was there until the day that I left. And he would buy in bulk. He would just resell stuff online. He would get like clearance stuff from a bunch of stores at the outlet mall and just resell it at full price and make a ton of money. But he was a cool guy. Like, he came in often enough that I got to know him pretty well. You know, we eventually even like exchanged phone numbers, and you know, we've texted on occasion since I've even left. He's a cool dude. But he works at Walmart, and he works like the night shift somewhere in the back. You know, I don't know if he does shipping and receiving or what he does. But the one day after work, I left work really early in the morning from a shipment shift at like 5 a.m. And I decided to stop by Walmart to get some stuff on my way home so I wouldn't have to leave the house again for the day. And while I was there, I happened to see him at his job, which is unique because I had seen him at my job probably 100 times, but I never got to see him in his environment. And he was just kind of, he was stocking the beer fridge before he left, which isn't his job, but he just does it because they don't actually have a person to do that at our Walmart. It's just kind of like they have a person that kind of is supposed to do it every now and then, but it's like the last on their list of responsibilities. And this guy wants to make sure that our area is, you know, isn't thirsty. So he does it before he leaves work, and I caught him while he's doing that. And so we're just standing there chatting. He's like, "Oh, hey, look." I look over, and there's this guy, and he's just like, he's on the phone, but he looks like, I don't know, he looks weird. Like, what is he doing? He's kind of ducking behind a tray of Little Debbie sandwiches or Little Debbie snacks. I'm like, what is that? What is he doing? And he's like, "That's so and so. He's one of our security guys here. He must be going after somebody." I'm like, "Oh, okay." And he's like, "Yeah, there he is." And so I look a little further past him, and the guy is staring at this dude who's over by the yogurt. And apparently this guy is like somebody that's probably like either just stolen something or somebody that's stolen stuff from the store before. So this guy who's in street clothes, he looks just like a normal dude. He has a cell phone up to his ear. He's just kind of discreetly following him around the store. And so I end my conversation with my buddy, and I go about my business. I go down a couple more aisles, and I find myself in the same aisle as the guy that they're following. And then sure enough, the guy on the cell phone who works for Walmart, he follows me. And then on the other end of the aisle, I see another person in street clothes. They're both wearing baseball hats. So the first dude looked pretty normal. The second did not look quite as normal, because now I'm like, okay, even though they're not required to wear a uniform, it kind of looks like they have one. He's also on his cell phone. These two are talking to each other as they track this dude through the store. And so I'm just going about my shopping. I'm curious, obviously. And like, if I had all the time in the world, I would just stay and watch this anyway. But I'm doing some shopping and I have to go through these aisles. So I'm basically in the middle of this manhunt through the grocery section of Walmart while they track this guy. And, I don't really know quite how it ended. But the guy left, and they didn't do anything about it, but it was still kind of interesting to see them do their work. They just kind of like, they're sneaking around in the way that I would like to as a child, you know, like hiding behind racks and just kind of like peeking around the edges while on the phone, just acting sneaky.
Like, are they armed?
No, I don't think they're armed. I don't think so. I don't know if they could be. They're not cops. They just...
No, I don't think they can be armed.
I mean, they might be armed with something that Walmart could sell, like like a squirt gun or something.
It's like their models. I thought, well, because some Walmarts, don't they sell guns in some Walmarts?
Oh, yeah, well, they did. I think they've stopped. I think most
of them
stopped.
It's like Abercrombie, but just their employees are models and they have to wear their clothes. The security guards have to use like their rifles or something.
That would be less
using a deer rifle to intimidate shoppers.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't know what they could have done. I'm sure they would have accosted him if they would have had like any proof that he would have taken anything, but it didn't appear that he did, at least not at that point in time. So it was still kind of interesting. I didn't really know how that would work in a Walmart, but apparently they have an undercover task force that they can deploy at any time.
Mm.
So keep that in mind, shoplifters.
Yeah, it's a job, and I bet those dudes love their jobs.
Oh yeah, they look like they're having a blast. Like they look like they're having like so much fun, and I don't blame them. It looked like a really good time. I love running around a store being all sneaky. Like when you were a kid and you would go, I mean, I don't know what it's like for you, but around here we didn't have a lot else to do. Like we get our licenses, okay, but we don't really have like money to spend. We can't really go out to eat. We can't go to the movies or bowling all the time because we'd run out of cash. So we can go to Walmart because it's free fun, right? You just walk around, mess with people, move stuff, like, I don't know, whatever children do these days. But there would always be the time when you go with like a group of friends and then you would sneak around each other and mess with each other in some way, even in college. So even after high school, in college, me and my best friend Dan, we lived together in a dorm, and every once in a while we'd make a Walmart run. We'd just go pick up some supplies so that we wouldn't have to leave our dorm room for the next couple weeks. And one time when we were there, I kind of lost track of him for a minute. I'm like, I don't know where he went. He must have gone to the hunting section. That's usually where Dan goes when he disappears. So sure enough, I sneak around the back way to the outdoors area, and I find him. And I'm like, okay, so I'm done shopping. What can I do here? So I ran and I checked out, and I took all my stuff out to the car. I came back inside, and then I just started stalking him. Like, he's texting me. He's like, hey, are you ready to go? He's like, where are you at? And I'm not answering, and I'm just kind of following him. So then I would just send him pictures of himself from behind racks.
Oh,
he's just
great.
Like walking by, and I would just keep sending him pictures. And then I'd like, you know, I'd quickly run to like a different angle, and then I'd see him look at it. He turned around
he
to where
hear
I was.
You're running?
Well, I'm not running, and it's Walmart. It's pretty big. Like, there's other people there making noise. It's
just watching you stalk your friend from like maybe 20 feet away.
Who cares? I don't care. And you know, neither of these people that work at Walmart apparently, but yeah, it's good times. Those are some of my fondest memories in college.
Jesus.
Is that sad?
No, I think it's pretty nice.
It was fun. We had a little tradition, Dan and I. We'd go to Walmart, and whenever we'd go down an aisle that had like a bunch of something that if you were to like toss it in his direction and he didn't catch it, it wouldn't break. I would throw a bunch of them at him in quick succession. Dan doesn't like to cause a scene, and he doesn't like to be embarrassed. So I would just start, like, for example, if we're in the hunting and fishing section, I would grab a handful of bobbers and I would throw them one at a time. So then he has to catch them one at a time while managing to hold all of them all in one go. And so I would do that every aisle that we go down, whether it be like packages of Lego minifigures or something small, something that wouldn't break. But that was good times. Those are fond memories.
Did I ever tell you that I slept in a Walmart once?
In? Where?
Okay, so it was, I don't know if the van was especially crowded or it was really cold out that night, but for some, no, okay, this is years before. I'm getting my tours confused. This was a college tour, so this is like 2006. This is like after my freshman year in college. I'm on tour. We're not touring in a van. We're touring with a Jeep and a trailer. That's, you know, how embarrassing this tour was. Mm-hmm. It was a self-booked tour with my first high school band, and we didn't have a place to sleep, but we were at a 24-hour Walmart. And sleeping in the Jeep was really uncomfortable because you could have one person across the back bench, but the rear was covered in gear, mm-hmm. so you can't sleep in the trunk. You might be able to roll like the driver's seat and the passenger seat backwards, mm-hmm. but you can't fully recline because of the person lying down the back. So that was a horrible night. So we got ourselves into the Walmart somehow, and we're just walking around. It's probably like close to midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. So it's pretty close to graveyard shift there. And we grabbed like a pillow from the bedding section and found like a rack close enough to the ground and kind of just climbed in and like pulled some boxes around us. It sounds like a TV show, but we fully did it.
Wow.
And yeah, and we got in there, and I probably slept for like, I don't think I slept longer than 45 minutes there because somebody started stocking a shelf right next to us, like probably like maybe 7 or 8 feet. And like, we would just wait for them to take a break for a second. And then we were just like, okay, we should probably leave. Cause like, I was in college at the time. So like, you really don't have an idea of like what is serious in the world. And like, I think security was a little bit different back then. Like, we were definitely living in a post 9/11 society, but like, you know, you don't think about like people and being dangerous as much back then, like 2006 for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe just because I was a stupid college kid at the time.
Nobody'd eat anybody's face because of bath salts. And
yeah, I guess, I mean, on record, it hadn't. But yeah, so like we just crashed on a shelf for a little bit. I think it was me and Tori. And we got out and we left. And I think we just ended up sleeping on the ground outside. Kind of like we would roll our sleeping bags out and kind of sleep underneath the car because it was dead. It was the middle of summer. It had to be like late July. Mm. And we were in the South because that was an East Coast tour and we definitely weren't up North. So yeah, I mean, like, you could sleep outside, but it was just, you know, pavement, and it was a busy parking lot, so you just really couldn't sleep that well. But that was one of those tours you just did for the experience. But yeah, I did sleep in the Walmart for 45 minutes. God knows what would have happened if I'd gotten caught, but hey.
Probably nothing too serious. I mean,
maybe a lifetime ban from Walmart. Yeah. There's another stop later on in that tour where we were in the same scenario, and but we were at a 24-hour supermarket, not Walmart. And we decided we were going to sleep in shopping carts. It wasn't. And at one point it was like probably like 2 or 3 in the morning, and we had managed to doze off, just like kind of sleeping in a shopping cart, kind of like you're kind of propped up and just like in it. And this guy just like who was obviously just working like overnight, couldn't really verbalize too much for whatever reason or another. And he was just like, he came over, he's like, get out of the shopping cart. I need to collect it so I can do my job, because he has to rescue the carts from the parking lot. That's his job. And I'm impeding him from that. And right. I was just like, oh, okay. And I just like,
oh no,
I don't know. Like these the stupidest things we put ourselves through, because we just didn't want to get hotels. Like if we had all pitched in to get a hotel, it was a different time back then. Like we all had debit cards, I'm sure, with like whatever savings we had like cobbled together. But
right,
you know, like we could have all split a hotel room. You know, we could have gotten hotel.
You could have gotten in trouble with that too. You know, like all splitting one hotel room, you can get in trouble for that.
I guess we did that so many times later on in life, you know, like that. I guess I never really thought about it that way, is like sneaking people into hotel rooms and whatnot.
I got a band in trouble with that once.
Really?
Yeah.
How did they just, you know, somebody came knocking, well, and was like, you know, two to a bedroom, you know, like what?
No,
if we're a party.
It was like, I don't remember the entire situation because I was really sick. It was the worst. I think it was just allergies, but it was so bad that I couldn't breathe, and I didn't have any allergy medicine with me. It was just a really bad time. We're on our way from Pittsburgh to Albany, and like a couple of the guys from the band, I was sitting shotgun. I was supposed to be helping keep the driver awake, but I couldn't stay awake. Like I was trying. We were playing very loud, heavy music. Like, he was fine. He was totally fine on his own. He didn't need me, thank God. But I couldn't stay awake. Like, I couldn't breathe all day, and I was just exhausted. So I ended up falling asleep. We get to this hotel. A couple of them go inside to get their room. The rest of us are supposed to like stay in the van and wait. We parked a little further away. That way they could come, they could get their stuff, they could get in. And then after a couple minutes, we would go in. So at the very least, it would look like maybe the first two went back out to the car to get something, right? But there's like five of us that were going to be sleeping in the hotel room, and I think one was going to stay in the van. And I don't even remember what I did, but I remember them getting really pissed off at me because I was like walking towards the hotel, and I guess like the owner saw me or something. Nothing ended up happening. We didn't get charged extra or anything, but they got really pissed off because I didn't listen. I should have just slept in the van.
Oh God. So wait, you just didn't listen? Like that's what they're mad about, is,
well,
your bad listener?
Yeah, because there was a good chance that they were going to get like double charged for the room.
Oh, the band was mad at you. I thought the owner was mad at you.
No, the band was mad because, you know, they were like trying to be sneaky. They went in, they paid for the room, and then we were all going to like slowly in pairs of two go up to the room. And I don't remember what I did. Like, I don't know if I like went towards the building or something. Like, I thought I just got out of the car and stayed near the van, but I don't know. It ended up partially being my fault. Nothing really happened, but I remember feeling doubly bad that evening because I, one, wasn't able to stay awake and help the pilot continue their flight, but also I almost got a double charge for the room.
Double charge.
So yeah, that was rough.
We did a lot of like sneaking into things. The band that I was with did, but I only had to do it once, like Bamboozle in Anaheim.
Oh, so like sneak into the festival?
Yeah, like we would like fully would just, because the back of the van we had, oh man, this is again tour stories. We had bunks in the back. I'll just say it that way, because any other way of describing it is just stupid. Mm. we had bunks in the back, and basically we just put a bunch of comforters over me and like one other person, and they didn't charge us to go into Bamboozle with the rest of the band. Like, because I think the band only had like, you know, five people allowed in or something, and there were seven of us, so two of us had to sneak in hidden in the trunk. And I think they might have opened it up, but we were covered enough by blankets and they didn't want to just, you know, dig into our blankets or whatever. But that was, yeah, sneaking into places.
Man.
Warped, never hotels, though. Never
Warped
had
was
issue.
Like the easiest place to sneak into.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Venetian Fair had just like a reputation for being the people that would sneak in every day. And not even to play. It was like before they were put on the tour to play shows, they would just sneak in every day.
Yeah.
And it was so much so that they got to know the security guard. So like, I think I was on the phone with Ben as he was finishing out his last day of Warped Tour. Of selling to the lines and everything like that, and blasting the CD to people. And he like, I remember he was on the phone with me and he was like waving goodbye, or like, he's like, oh, see you later, man. Good talking to you. And like, it was one of the security guards that had just, he'd been evading all summer. And it's just, did you ever sneak into Warped Tour?
A couple times. Like,
damn,
it was always for
bad.
Like semi-official means, but it was always just easier to walk in from the bus entrance than it was to go through the press line. Like, the press line wasn't different than the normal line. You still had to go through most of the line and then get up to the press tent or whatever. But then, like, at the press tent, they would just give you your ticket, and then you had to get back in the line. So even if you, like, cut everybody, went to the press tent, you would still have to get in the line to, like, go into the venue with everybody else, go through security and all that. And the venue where they've had Warped in the Cleveland area for the past couple of years is, like, super tight on security. They're big jerks about water bottles and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I had like all kinds of things in my backpack at the time, because I was like not only a music industry professional who had to go to Warped Tour sometimes, but also a senior Boy Scout who would occasionally have his pocket knife and a lighter with him. So yeah, there was always that kind of thing. And it was just so much easier to like grab a box of something. Like, it could have been like, I think there are maybe two occasions where I would just grab an empty box in order to walk past security in through the back gate. Like, if you're walking from the buses and it looks like you're carrying merch, they're not going to ask you to stop and pull out your laminate. You got something in your hands, you're good.
Yeah. And also, I mean, like, what do they care?
Yeah. And they really don't, but
yeah,
I mean, it's,
I think
it's easier,
the bad part,
like, if you know somebody too, you don't really have to sneak. You just walk in with your friend and they're like, you know, there's a non-verbal communication that occurs between the person with the pass and the person who is supposed to check the passes, and you're good to go.
I imagine like the end of the day barbecue for the bands that are officially on the tour is also like a place you're not welcome if you're sneaking in. I can't remember if they did or didn't do that when they were not on the tour and sneaking in.
That would be,
I imagine,
a little
they just
weird.
Left out the front. Yeah, I think they just walked out the front, you know.
Like, if it was a one-time thing, like, okay, because that's some variability at the barbecue, which is always interesting.
Yeah.
But if it's like the kind of thing where you're crashing every night, it's kind of...
Yeah, they almost always knew a band on the tour, like, and some of the bands in the label were on the tour, so it was like okay for them to be there some days, or like it was more like understandable to try and sneak them into that part of it. Right. I don't remember. Again, I'm just spouting off ideas that I remember from the time.
I mean, tour. Like the barbecue at the end of the day is a good opportunity for everybody to just like take a break and socialize, right? I mean, it's supposed to be a way to like just calm down, but it's also a cool time for, you know, the, like, if you're on the tour and you have friends in the city that you want to come out, you can guest list them and they can come enjoy the tour for free, right? Which is really nice, but there's not really a ton of opportunity for you to just hang out with them, right? Because it's hot, it's in the middle of the day, there's really nowhere to just like go chill. You have sets, you have signings, you've got to maybe man your merch tent when you're not performing. Like, it is work. It's summer camp in a lot of respects, but also it's a lot of work. So when the tour is over for the day and you load all your stuff back up into the bus, you go to the barbecue, and usually your friends who you brought into the tour, you bring to the barbecue so you can hang out with them for a little while. So that's kind of it is a cool thing, but I can see how it'd be pretty weird if the same band that isn't on the tour that nobody really knows is just there. I'm sure they'd get some side eyes, but I'm sure the Venetian Fair had more than enough connections to make it into most of those.
Probably not at the beginning, but by the end they definitely did. Beginning of, like, that summer I'm speaking specifically, like the beginning of the summer sneaking in, they probably didn't have as good a rep, but by the end of it They're hard workers, you know. They're hardworking guys. Do you remember your first Warped Tour, like your first Warped Tour set?
No, I don't. I went pretty late. You know, like as much as I was into the music thing, I didn't really get into like the industry side of things until my senior year of high school. And I think that might've been the first year that I went. So it was pretty late. Like there were a lot of years that I wish I would have gone prior to that. You know, like my dream tour, my dream years probably were like between 2003 and 2006, but there was like no way in hell my parents were going to let me go to a Warped Tour. They wouldn't let me go to Weird Al Yankovic. So yeah, it wasn't.
Oh, that's messed up though. Weird Al. Ugh.
Yeah. Tell me about it, man.
Is it messed up that like I put Weird Al on the same level as like Levon Helm in terms of like people I needed to see? Like I didn't see Levon Helm before he died, and that is a huge regret that I will go. It's not like a life ruining one, but like it is a big regret of mine that I didn't get to see Levon before he died. And like Weird Al is like 70, is he? No, did I just make that up? I think I'm just making that up.
He's getting up there.
How old is Weird Al?
Weird Al age.
I'm Googling.
He is 59.
Okay, so he is not 70 years old. I'm so sorry. God, a million Twitters just reaching out for us right now.
I'm sure it's okay.
Stop. Hold the tweets, guys. Hold the tweets.
To be fair, he's been around 70. Forever.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell me he was 70, and I'd be like, all right, I guess that sounds all right. Yeah. But, I mean, you don't look it weird. You don't look
it. Yeah. No, man, I totally get it. I'm not a fan of the band or anything, so I don't really have that kind of attention to Levon Helm. But, you know, I've always wanted to see Rush perform live, and I'm pretty sure they're done now, and that's really, really disappointing. So
if they ever come back, it's going to be an expensive ticket.
I know. But I've had so many opportunities, you know? They've been touring consistently for all time. And I think they might have taken a couple of short breaks in, like, the late 2000s, but, like, I should have gone during the Time Machine tour or the Clockwork Angels tour. I don't think I wanted to go to the 40th anniversary tour. There's no way I was getting tickets for that. But any of those like last album legs, I should have just bucked up the money, bought the tickets and gone, because I'll regret forever never going to see Rush.
Yeah, it's good they're all still alive. Like the Levon Helm thing though, he did like a little Hootenanny thing up in his barn, you know, up in Woodstock, mm-hmm. New York. Like it was an event, like in the summers or whatever, it would be like Saturday, Sundays, he would just, you know, have just a concert, and mm-hmm. you'd buy a ticket, be like, I don't know how many people would show up, but like I think it was like a potluck type deal. Like it was just, it seemed like a thing. And me and my friend Joe were just always like, dude, we gotta go see Levon. And then he died, and it was just like huge regret of mine not doing that. So kids, make sure you go see, if you want to do something, go do it.
Especially if it has an expiration. Yeah.
Yeah, especially if it has an expiration. Well, any idol, you know, like Bazan could die, you know, tomorrow.
Oh, I
know. God, I hope he doesn't, you know, but like any of your favorite artists could die that you've never seen, you know, and if you really wanted to do it, you know, like I don't think my dad ever saw the Beatles live. I don't think he really had the chance to, but
yeah,
like,
there weren't like a ton of opportunities for somebody.
Yeah, I guess that's a bad example. So a lot of people didn't get to see the Beatles live. I would say most people didn't see the Beatles live. I mean, how long were they a band for that like played live shows? Not very long.
Their last live show was in 65, 66.
No, wasn't it the 70s?
Dude, they were done being a band by 70.
Jesus, dude. Like there are bands like the Arcade Fire have been a band longer than...
Yeah.
And the Beatles, and they play stadiums or like arenas, I guess we should say.
It will never cease to amaze me how incredible it is that the Beatles created everything that they did in a span of basically 7 or 8 years.
I mean, but that's what's going to happen to like the White Stripes, you know, in 20 years. People are going to look back at the White Stripes as classic rock. And I mean, like it's already like the bands we grew up with are leftovers at this point in a good way, like in the way that... Like it's like an afternoon radio show, like, oh, hits from the 90s, like throwback, you know, throwback hour on for 90s music. It's like, wait, like Third Eye Blind is now
Matchbox
considered
20?
Like, those are like nostalgic bands now. And like, that was just what was on. This is not an interesting topic. I think the more interesting part is the idea that the Beatles have such a crazy legacy 50 years later, you know?
And, well, that's like one of a kind. I honestly don't think that'll ever be reproduced in any meaningful way.
You don't think the Strokes, people look back at like the Strokes as
no.
a...
No, I don't. I don't think that children are born into this world knowing songs by the Strokes.
Nobody's born into the world with Beatles in their brain.
I disagree with that. Like, people,
they're indoctrinated.
Yeah.
But they're not born into it.
I haven't heard the Strokes in probably 5 or 6 years.
But, I mean, will you indoctrinate your kids into, like, Mansions or something like that?
Oh, for sure. They're growing up
with
Dig Up the Dead.
Right, I mean, man, like, that's just, you see what I'm saying? Is it like, the
Those
Beatles are just going to be...
They're going to be so sad. They're,
to you, it's like, your kids are just going to have, you know, like, Fall Out Boy as their, like, Beatles. And they're going to be like, well, and they'll look back and be like, I was born in the wrong time period, you know?
Let's be real. Point, like, my kids will grow
your
up
kids
with
are
going to
grow emo bangs and...
Well, it's how our hair falls, but... They're gonna grow up with the Beatles for sure. The Beatles, Paul Simon, Simon and Garfunkel. Like, we've talked about this before. Like, the idea of our kids growing up with some of the same things that we grew up with. Like, making that decision for them, because there's a point in their lives where they really don't get to decide what they take in. The movies they watch, the music that they listen to, maybe the video games that they play. Like, it's all gonna be filtered through the parents, at least for a while. Which is nice. So we have like a little bit of time where we can try to get them into things that we enjoy. Maybe it's the comic books that we read, or the Beatles, or Simon and Garfunkel, like Star Wars.
What if your kids hate the Beatles, though? What if like you put on, I don't know, what's your favorite Beatles song?
I think part of learning to love the Beatles is hating the Beatles.
That sounds weird.
It does sound
like
weird.
Cult-y.
And maybe it's not, like not as extreme as hatred, but I think a lot of people grow up thinking, yeah, okay, the Beatles, sure, like it's the Beatles, fine, it's an oldie group, what's so special about them? And then they figure it out at some point, it just clicks, and then people get it. Like, it, you have to people can enjoy the Beatles for, you know, just their singles, like the songs that you hear on the movies that you watch, but to really love the Beatles, you've got to dive deep. You've got to listen to the full albums. You have to at least make it through Revolution Number 9 once.
Well, yeah. I don't... Once is all I can give for some of that stuff. But, like, I will say, I think you're on the right path with that. But I feel like it's not just, like, you have to dive deep. I feel like it's something... It's like a trial you have to put yourself to. Like, yeah. Like you have to, because I think your perception of the Beatles has to do with which Beatles you're thinking of when you think of the Beatles. Like, I think a lot of people think of, like, Hard Day's Night and, like, Close Your Eyes and whatever it's called, All My Lovin', that's what I'm thinking. Like, if you think of that as the Beatles and, like, you know, Ed Sullivan stuff, and you don't like that type of music, you're going to think the Beatles suck.
And it could be the opposite too. I think a lot of people, maybe they see them that way, but I think more people probably see them as like drugged out weirdos who make songs like Goo Goo Gajoo.
Yes.
But then once you find that older stuff, you're like, okay,
cut,
these
though.
Are good.
I don't think that's not one you'd hear in the radio that often though, on like
maybe
the
not,
oldie stations.
But
like you're going to hear the
Yellow
Ed
Submarine
stuff,
might be.
Maybe. Yeah,
Sergeant
Pepper's.
Guess. Like, there's some weird stuff in those years that
it's divisive, and I think you're more likely to get radio play on an oldie station with the earlier stuff. But I see to your point. Yellow Submarine is definitely one you could hear a lot.
About this? Is this fair to say? Maybe you know some Beatles songs. Like I say, I think some people are born with the songs in their brains. Maybe not. Maybe you learn them. But everybody knows at least one or two Beatles songs. It's just the way that they're present in our society. I think to love the Beatles, you have to find one Beatles song that isn't necessarily a big single that you love.
Yes.
Like Rocky Raccoon.
You're reading my mind right now. Maybe not with Rocky Raccoon, but yes.
It's just an example.
Idea,
like that was one that
I
remember getting
it.
Me.
There's a keyhole in your brain for the Beatles, and it has to be unlocked by one song, and that song is different for every single person.
Yeah. Oh, man, I would love to do some kind of survey where I find out what that one song is for a bunch of different people and then run an analysis on who wrote that song. Like, is that a John?
You could do a podcast. You could do a 10-minute podcast where you just say which Beatles song. You probably couldn't play it because someone would come for money.
Yeah.
But like you could talk about it and be like, okay, this is the Beatles song. I don't think it'd be super interesting.
No,
but
I think.
But it's an idea.
I mean, yeah, that could be a podcast. Anything
free podcast idea for somebody.
I just there are certain things that I would love to look at quantitatively, like drill down and find the data behind this thing. And one of the things that I think would be interesting is to find that one key Beatles song that got you to be a Beatles fan. And is that a George song? Is that a Paul song? I would just love to know who has like the highest conversion rate
of all the Beatles. Yeah, I mean, was Rocky Raccoon yours? You mentioned that.
That was definitely one of them. I remember that for some reason, you know, just that first bit. And Rocky Raccoon, I don't know, like when he sang that line, it nailed me. Like, that's a good one. Even Maxwell's Silver Hammer, that's kind of a goofy one in the same vein as Rocky Raccoon. And I think both of those, for some reason, drew me in. I don't know why.
So you're more of a Paul guy then?
I was. I think I definitely was for a period of time.
Okay, yeah.
I think if I were to guess, I would say that Paul is probably converted the most. But I think any serious Beatles fan would probably consider maybe John or George the best of the batch. But that's up for debate depending on who you talk to, I guess.
I've found myself being a George guy lately. But yeah, I mean, I guess my gateway, my keyhole Beatles song would have been, I think Abbey Road ends with the medley kind of, right?
Oh,
like where all the songs.
Man, yeah.
So like I considered that all one thing, and that kind of opened my eyes a little bit, because I don't think I'd heard that on a record prior to that. And I don't think I'd ever gotten through Abbey Road before and thought about it that way. Like I just, like as a kid, you know, I put on one or two songs like I'm the Walrus or whatever, and Yellow Submarine and Back in the USSR, like as one-offs, but I never looked at them as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think, yeah, that's probably that. But oh man.
Man, Abbey Road, what a record. It's such a variance of songs.
Yeah. I'm just like, bread, what a crazy food.
No, seriously, like you're right. Like, you know, there are a lot of songs in there that might draw some people in. You know, Maxwell Silver Hammer is on there. I always forget that. Something, come on, dude. Come together. Like the entire record is full of hits. But that last like four tracks, Golden Slumbers Through Her Majesty. What an amazing ending to a record. Like that's a great succession of tracks that I don't think I appreciated fully until maybe like 2 years ago. I'm like, man, this is a really good sequence of songs.
Yeah. Oh man. He's great.
Anyway, last year I bought a Paul Simon record at the record store. And as I was walking home with it, I was thinking, man, I'd really like to go see Paul Simon in concert. I think it'd be really cool to see him put on a show. And I got home and I put the Paul Simon record and on the shelf with the rest of my record collection, and I googled Paul Simon just to see like the dates for his tour, see if he was coming through town anytime soon, and he was in town that night and the show was already going on and I missed
it. My god, what bad luck.
So
he's done too.
Is he officially done? He has a show at Outside Lands.
I think this is his retirement year. I thought I saw on his Facebook page, which pops up on my news feed for some reason sometimes.
I've missed out on so much.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to go to more shows this year. I've been to a very, very small handful of shows in the past couple months. I think, man, maybe even just like one or two since the years began. Could just be the one. And that was just to like meet a friend. But I've got a bunch of shows coming up in May that I'm pretty excited for, and I might add one more to it depending on how the schedule goes, because I start that full-time job, so I don't want to go too crazy. But I'm going to see the 1975, which I'm super stoked for.
Of course you are. You love them.
They're fun. I'm going to see them, and then I think later that week, a couple days after that, I'm going to see Julia Michaels.
Oh, dude, that's great.
Super stoked for that. Like, I've been known to be wrong about musicians before, and it's not like she's not already been super successful, Julia Michaels, like in her own right and then as a songwriter for years. But I think like her songs are just going to continue to keep blowing up. And so being able to see her even at the House of Blues, that's going to be like a memorable show, I hope. Cause I mean, at some point, I think she'll be playing much, much bigger venues. If not stadiums, then very large outdoor arenas. And so, yeah, I'm excited to see that. And then I think I'm going to try to go see Coheed. If I can get the tickets, I'm going to try to go see Coheed this year.
Is that going to be is that a big venue that they're playing?
I don't know which. They might be playing outside. I don't know. I need to double check on that. I only found out about this show fairly recently because my buddy went and saw Coheed without me. He went to go see them in Cincinnati, which is further, a longer drive than I think I probably would have made. And plus, I think May and I had just gotten home from being out of town or something, so I don't think I would have been up for it anyway. But yeah, I'm dying to see them. You know, they're one of my all-time favorite bands, and for some reason, I've never seen them play, mostly because they never come to Cleveland. But
oh wow, that's great. I feel like the only music I go to see now are bands that I've seen before.
Yeah, like Hopalong, or
yeah, like Hopalong, like Bazan. He's playing in May, I think. I'm gonna try and catch him in Brooklyn. And I mean, like, everybody comes to New York City. Every single band will always come to New York City forever.
Yeah,
I think it's usually the most frustrating tour spot for any band too. I don't remember ever enjoying being in New York while I was in the van
right.
with the bands. It's just really inconvenient to drive around, especially if you have a lot of gear, and like parking is a nightmare, and loading in is always like up 10 flights of stairs or like through some weird back alley that you can't get the van into, so you have to walk it in and the doors aren't wide enough. Mm-hmm. Just New York is a nightmare, but everybody comes here. That's the one thing that you can always count on, is that like no one's going to skip New York City because it's pretty much guaranteed to be their biggest show just for the sheer population density. Yeah. Oh man. So I usually only see bands I like, and the idea of going to a show stresses me out. I don't know about you, but like,
yeah,
like some people like Dan Bogosian, not a person that, I mean, I can't speak for him now, but when I got to know him years ago, he was the person that was like, I am going to a show, and he was going to multiple shows all the time. And like,
yeah,
just,
like that's multiple shows a week. Like he
thrived on
there,
it, you know? Yeah. And I don't know now, but like, that idea of just going to a show is like oppressive to me. I'm like even Bazan, who I definitely want to go see. I mean, it's Pedro the Lion again. He's taken the moniker, but just the thought of buying tickets and then dragging myself up to Williamsburg, which is like maybe 2.5 miles, 3 miles from me. Like it's not that bad, but it's just like, you know, oh God, like 45 minutes on the train, or like, oh, I got to get a cab and then I'm going to go. It's just very city folk problems that just don't matter and aren't a big deal. And then just like, man, I don't know why, but I just don't.
No.
When I think about shows, it's just like a weird. It's not like the people, because like once I'm there, it's fine. It's like the act of going to get to the thing.
That's
is
totally
what
it.
Makes me yeah.
Because I mean, it's
like flying almost.
It is,
it's like,
almost like
the process of getting to the gate is just so frustrating and inconvenient and terrible.
Oh, you nailed it there.
And once you're at the gate, it's just like you're gonna sit down and be like, okay, let's gonna call my seat anytime.
That's like, a good analogy. It would be a lot more convenient if the venue were closer to your house, right?
Right.
And that's why the only shows that I generally go to now are the ones that are in Akron, because they're close by, and chances are I have a class that's late enough into the afternoon or evening that I don't have to leave, and I'm like a block away.
Yeah.
And I also have free parking because I'm a student. So
yes, that's great.
So there's advantages there. So with these shows that I'm going to in May, I had to plan these out ahead of time. And I very rarely ever buy tickets ahead of time. I just, like, if I really want to go see somebody and I'm compelled enough to do it, I'll buy it in like the 2 weeks prior without giving myself like too much notice. As long as I know that that night is going to be free, then I'm sure I'll go see the show. But with these shows, especially being bigger shows at bigger venues with a lot more people and all of the stresses that come with parking and all that stuff in bigger cities, I had to buy these tickets ahead of time to make myself go. Because if I would have waited, I might not have gotten the tickets. And also, I just wouldn't have gone. Like, I would have been like, I don't want to.
Oh, yeah, that's it. You got to like force. You got to commit yourself. That's like the only way I can do anything, is if I just commit myself. Where like, if I have to like strangle this part of myself that is like, stop it, don't do it, you don't want to do it, I have to just be like, shut up, I'm buying these tickets right now, okay, got it,
just get it,
we're going to the show. And then I buy the tickets and I have to stop strangling this part of myself, because I just have to, you know, it has to exist. And then it's just like, why did you do that, you dumbass? And I have to go to this thing, and I'm like, oh, you're right, but I'm going, you know. Mm. Like,
are there any shows you plan on going to this year?
Page of the Lion. That's it, really. I mean, that's the only thing that popped up. I mean, like, I get show notifications twice a day from various venues that I bought tickets from. Mm. I just deleted one. Get Up Kids are coming.
Unsubscribe, man.
No, I like to, because sometimes there are bands that pop up that I don't know about, you know, or like I'll get, like, my credit card company will send me an email like, oh, we have like pre-orders for Sylvanesso, you know, like something like that. And I'm like, oh, I saw Sylvanesso, I'd like to see them again. There's few bands that just like kick me in the ass to like go see them.
Mm-hmm. What band have you seen the most?
Bazan, okay. Without a doubt. I've seen him upwards of like 10 times, I think.
Wow.
In various mediums. Yeah, like I saw him for the first time live at an acoustic gig in Northampton, Mass. That I played the early show, he played the late show. So the owner just let us stick around as a thank you for playing or whatever. And he closed out the night. We sold more tickets than him that night. That was crazy. Wow. We sold, like, I say we, but my band leader sold the place out. And yes, and he, you know, his acoustic set after us was intimate enough that we could like push tables close to the stage and sit, and nobody had to take a balcony seat. I think the balconies were empty at this show. Yeah, it was just like, yeah, that was the first time I saw him. And then, you know, I saw him 3 or 4 times in Boston, 3 or 4 times in New York City, I've seen him in other states, just randomly. I never saw a Living Room show, which is weird because that's kind of a staple at this point, is Living Room shows. I just feel weird about those. Have you been to a Living Room show?
Not one that was billed and had people come.
Oh, just like a spontaneous, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
thing happening.
Yeah, I've seen like something spontaneous, but never those. I mean,
you never bought tickets to a Living Room show?
I've seen like house shows, but they're always in the basement.
Right. Yeah. I'm talking about like ticket sales that like you buy ahead of time. And
right.
They mail you the address day of or whatever, and then you have to go and find parking and you're in someone's living room with like your shoes off at the door, or not your shoes off at the door if the host is really just trying to smother their cleanliness standards. Like, it's, yeah, it's a weird concept. I played a bunch of them. I never went to one or bought tickets to one, but I played a bunch of them with that said band leader. And yeah,
I like the idea of them. John Roderick used to do them, which would have been really cool to see.
I think if you have a following, they're amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a great thing. But I just, it's, when I sit back and look at it from afar, it's very weird.
Well, it is.
You're letting 20 to 30 people into your house.
Yeah.
If they can fit that. Usually they ask for 20 to 30, like, space to fit them. And it's complete strangers. And you're just opening your house up to people that you've never met before.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful example of, and I don't think there's ever been a problem. I've never heard any horror stories from one. Maybe parking is like the hardest thing, that, cause it might irritate the neighbors.
Right. But, yeah.
But like, yeah, it's just a great example of like humans coexisting and being open and welcoming to one another. And it's music uniting people in its like purest form. I feel like I've never seen a better example of that.
Mm. We put on a show, when I say we, my buddy and I, in high school, we put on a show at his grandparents' property. They kind of had this, it's not even a barn. I think they might refer to it the barn. I think they just call it the land, because it's basically a garage that's sitting on this pretty well-mown plot of land that goes along a creek and sits between two fields. And it's kind of a nice area. They might hunt in the woods back there. I don't know. But it was like a cool spot to like go camping or just have like a campfire, because it's away from the roads and everything. It's very quiet. It was a cool place. And we decided one summer to put on a show, and we brought up this musician. His name's Justin Posey. And I just found all of his CDs. You know, he gave me like copies of all his CDs at the time. He was just this like acoustic artist who did, you know, some covers and a bunch of original stuff, but he was a big pure volume artist in like 2009, 2010. And, man, where is he from? He's from somewhere in the South, and it was very strange for him to like actually come up here and do the show. But he came up and just like played mostly for our friends. And then these two people from Indiana came out because it was the closest he'd ever come to Indiana. So they drove all the way out to northeastern Ohio, literally in the middle of nowhere, like really far from the closest highway. And yeah, that was just really strange. But it was a cool time. Like, we all just kind of like hung out and he played music around the campfire, and it was kind of cool. I think after that, oh, he's from Louisiana. He's from Shreveport, Louisiana. And jeez, he probably had like a show in Tennessee or Kentucky or something. And I was like, hey, why don't you come up and play a show here? Because, you know, the idea of putting on a show is really exciting. But what's exciting for the artist is that there are going to be people there. So when it's like you, your friend who knows your music, and then like three other people, it's kind of disappointing. But we all camped out. It was cool. Like, we made breakfast in the morning, and it wasn't too much different than just having you stay the night at my parents' house, except that I didn't ask you to play. We did ask him to play, and you weren't expecting any people at my house.
Yeah.
And also, it was convenient for you to be driving through because you had a show there that actually, you know, well,
right,
whether or not that show had people or not, you had a show there. You had an actual paying gig. So that was a weird thing, but it's cool. I like the idea of like the more intimate shows. The house shows are always super fun. I saw Tiny Moving Parts at a house in Akron, and man, that was incredible because that basement is so cramped and musty and everything, but it gets so sweaty.
Sweaty, yeah.
But dude, they are the perfect band for that.
People getting hit in the face with the guitar headstocks, and oh man.
There's a bunch of it like the support poles in the way, actually.
Oh yeah, yes. I got fucking sidekicked in the head at one from a pit, like, oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think everything went white for a second and I got up and someone was like, you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine.
And you start
hurt.
Playing again. They're like, no, we went to the next song.
Yeah. Oh man. I should send you pictures. I think I have sent you pictures now that I think about it from those basement shows. But, there's only a few of those. I mean, on tour, on like our self-booked tours, that's where it mostly happened. There was some on the Old Best Friend tour that you caught me on. Mm. That had a couple nice house shows.
Yeah.
Some really interesting DIY venues. Cause we like, Matt Sokol, the drummer for Old Best Friend. He, at the time, he booked everything. He just said to me, we're going on tour. I'll do all the work if you pay for it, essentially. You know, I'll play for free if you just cover food or whatever. And that sounded like a good deal to me. And he booked everything through Do DIY. And like some of the shows, he would probably also concur with me that were shit. But it was also just like a really interesting way to see the things that are happening around, like outside of major cities. That's because that's everything we were just going to these little bumble towns that had, you know, like still could pull 20 people into a venue or whatever. It was so bizarre, but very cool to see.
Yeah, that's neat, dude. I think maybe a house show would have been better for Ohio.
I think so too. Yeah, that venue was not impressed with my draw of four people.
That was a really strange venue.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine it pulls in a lot for like the adult like jazz crowd or whatever, or like, you know, like the adult like 40 plus crowd. Bar bands, you know, just like, or regulars of the venue, just like, oh, like, so it was Thursday night, we're going over here.
I had my first sour beer there waiting for you guys to
really
go on. Yeah,
man, I wish I had liked beer at the time. I didn't drink before shows or after, really, because I was driving. So my tours were very boring, nothing crazy. So I was either in a relationship or I was driving, so I couldn't drink. So it was basically like your hands are tied in all respects of life.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you get the chance to do one more.
Yeah, but I don't think I don't think anything's going to change for me besides, I mean, I will hopefully be in a relationship if I ever do it again. Mm-hmm. And I will hopefully also not be drinking and driving if I ever do it again.
I don't know how ready you are to talk about any of this, but you have that, you know, that new opportunity that's coming up, which is going to be taking you across the country, and you're going to be living in a really different area, and you know, you're not going to have any of the things to do that keep you busy in New York City now, like apart from this podcast once a week.
I know.
You're not going to have like anything to do theoretically. So
stop saying it like that. you're going to be so bored.
No, I don't think you're going to be bored. I think it's really exciting and that it's going to give you opportunities to do a bunch of new stuff, but it could, you know, like whether or not you are interested in writing new music right now. It could give you an opportunity to just like play like local coffee shops and things and get your music out to some people that hadn't heard you before.
I do think, I do see it. I've been thinking about it since I got the offer. I guess I can be kind of blunt about it without saying too many details. I got an offer. My company offered me a contract job for 6 months on the West Coast, the San Francisco Bay Area. And that's a very far distance from where I live currently in New York City.
Yeah.
So, and I'm going to be leaving without my girlfriend, Erin. I'm going to be living out there. I'll be making visits and stuff. This is how I'm holding myself accountable, by saying it on a podcast. So I will be coming back to visit pretty frequently, and I have vacation time that I'll be using on this contract job. But, so I plan on, since I got the opportunity, I've been thinking about like how I'm going to travel there, being like, okay, I got to get a big suitcase, but I also need to make sure my carry-on item is my guitar.
Right.
So,
yes. So glad
I need to get that. Yeah, I need to get the guitar to there. I also thought about just buying another guitar over there. Hmm. I bought my guitar in 2005, and it is a piece of shit. I will be clear. It looks fancy, but it's not. Hmm. It sounds pretty bad at this point after years of not being maintained. It was never that expensive to begin with. And I could probably just, at this point in my life, maybe buy another guitar. I could buy another beater, I guess,
Yeah.
Out there.
It'd save you the hassle of traveling with it. It does suck to travel with.
It does. Oh my God, I hate flying with guitars because you always just, you're either gate checking it, praying to God that it makes it, or like hogging an entire overhead container. Like that's usually your only options. If they have a coat closet, sometimes the crew will stash it there, but mm-hmm. most often they will just lie and say they don't have one.
Yeah. Those and snowboards.
Oh yeah, snowboards. I feel better checking a snowboard. It's just a guitar is so hollow, an acoustic guitar is just the most hollow instrument, and it's so large and cavernous that like any weight on top of it will just crush it.
Right. Well, that's good to hear. It's good to hear that you're thinking about taking your guitar across the country when for the past couple of months, whenever you mention your guitar, it's just to say that you haven't touched it in the past three.
Yeah, I took it out last night, I think, or the night before, and was just fiddling around for the first time, and it's so sloppy.
Yeah.
But, I have to. I just don't think I'm going to have anything else to do out there. I imagine the work I'm doing out there is going to be a lot of learning.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be, but I do think it's just going to be business hours, nine to five kind of thing. And then I will hopefully make friends. I know like one or two people out there right now. So I assume that and I assume that my company will also encourage, me to, go to like, maybe they'll hold like events or something like that I'll get to attend, like get togethers or, maybe somebody will invite me to like eat food or something after,
after work.
Yeah. I mean, it just, what it feels like? It just feels like college when I think about it enough. Hmm. Like it just feels like college. And I remember how miserable I was freshman year of college. I went to freshman year of college. I had a high school girlfriend that I tried to maintain and was just miserable trying to keep up with her and, watching her having fun back home with all my friends and me not being able to be a part of it. I was making myself so terribly miserable. And I worry about that kind of happening again. But I hope that I'm adult enough now to kind of like just be an adult and kind of just be like, this is what my goal is. My goal is to go out there and do some work, make some money, learn some stuff. Mm-hmm. And I know how to keep myself entertained. And that's really it. I have a better understanding of myself, I hope. And I also think it's probably not going to be as solitary as I think it is. I will have a roommate out there, so
yeah,
that will be nice.
Yeah, hopefully they're cool.
Hopefully I'm cool to them also. I have to remember there's two sides to this coin. But yeah, I think it's going to be overall a positive experience. Not many people get to do it. And I feel honored at being chosen. And I'm going to make the most of it. It's going to be 6 months to learn a lot about myself.
I think it's going to be a good experience for you. I'm excited.
Yeah, and I'm excited that we'll have time to do other things too. There's that down. Not only does songwriting become a prospect, but more episodes of Bantha Fodder, as we mentioned last time we recorded.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we'll be able to hopefully put some more stuff together. It's a lot of Zelda. I mean, like, it never occurred to me that I might finish Breath of the Wild before I go out there. But if I wasn't able to finish it, Erin said I could take her Switch.
Wow, that's so nice.
Over to California. Yeah, it's very, especially if there's an Animal Crossing game coming out soon, because I know she loves Animal Crossing. She loves Animal Crossing. I think that, I mean, I'm going to be coming home frequently enough that if I can just beat Zelda, you know, in my first month of being out there, then I can just, you know, take it back to her, you know, and just leave the Switch with her so she can do her Animal Crossing. I told her I would buy another Switch and import my save file. Mm. And she was like, no, just take my Switch. It will be fine. I was like, okay, fine. Now I have to find a suitcase, though. I got to get a big suitcase.
Yeah.
I'm going to take like 6 months of clothes over there. I don't want to buy more clothes and just leave them there or like have to bring them back.
No. No, don't do that. Just get yourself a nice suitcase. Nice tough one. That way you can bring recording stuff with you too. And
Yeah. I mean, the interface is definitely coming over and I'll be taking the mic and the stand. So something tall enough to fit a Rode PSA-1 or whatever these things are. Yeah. Oh, I got an answer back from Sam. The two DVDs that he was banned from Walmart. Well, he didn't get caught with them, but he managed to grab them on the way out. They were Baby Mama, which I believe is the Tina Fey, Amy Poehler.
Yep.
Comedy, and the film 17 Again, starring Matthew Perry and Zac Efron. In his words, not my best haul. I mean, like, he built an entire movie library from stealing DVDs from like bargain bins at Walmart.
Nice.
It was very right of him. Nice, I mean, he could have been charged with grand theft, you know, by the amount that he took from them. Grand theft starts pretty early. I think it's like, what, I mean, more than like 200 or something like that? Or
could be.
It's something like that.
I know they changed the felony level. It was $500, but now it's $1,000.
That's probably good. Keeps some people, you know, from ruining their lives.
Because it depends
unjustly.
On where you are. In Florida, it's $300 for grand theft.
Nice. It's probably safe to say Sam was charged in Florida.
Anywhere between $500 and $1,000. Yeah.
We spend a lot of time in Florida. It's a lot. It adds up. A lot enough DVDs go away forever. What are you in for, man? You know, I just robbed a bank. What did you do? I stole Baby Mama from Walmart.
Oh, I love Tina Fey.
Oh, God. It couldn't have been worth it.
I got Pedro the Lion coming to the Ohio area in May.
Yeah, who?
Pedro the Lion?
Yeah. That's the same tour I'm seeing.
But it's the same night as Julia Michaels.
Ooh, tough choice. I would choose Julia. I bet Bazan would be mad, too. He'd probably want to go see Julia Michaels.
Yeah. Do people love Julia Michaels as much as I love Julia Michaels?
Who doesn't?
Okay.
She's
fantastic. I don't know. People got really annoyed with that that last song of hers, but like the first big single, the Issue song.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's really good pop.
Oh, I know. Did you listen to the new EP?
No, I haven't.
Oh, please do.
When did it come out,
work.
Actually?
A couple months ago?
Oh, maybe? And then I probably did. I mean, I shuffled her all of her stuff
in her
recently.
Monologue.
Probably. Yeah, I couldn't sing it to you, but
that song Happy. Oh my gosh. I'm dying to hear like a pop punk post hard, like not a post hardcore, I guess like I don't know. Do they call them hardcore bands still? Like Tiny Moving Parts is kind of the thing that I'm thinking of.
Post? Just use the word post is like an all-encompassing
I
thing.
Know,
if you
but
don't
post-hardcore
want to commit to hardcore,
me, post-hardcore
just post.
Is like
it can be post anything. Just post.
Okay.
Just
whatever.
Post. You know.
I want one of those
like
screamy pop punky bands to cover Happy because it's such a freaking jam, and I could just like I can hear the breakdowns in my brain.
It'll probably come out in like Punk Goes Pop Volume 20 or whatever they're on now.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
I have like the first two of those. They're great for making somebody laugh. That's pretty much it, though.
I've been working on a Julia Michaels collection recently. You know, I have that the Frank Ocean compilation
yes.
of rarities. Which I don't know if I've mentioned this, but it's been ripped off. I mean, as much as it can be ripped off, they're not my songs. But my collection has been ripped off and printed on vinyl by some crazy Germans looking to make a buck.
Wow, you're of global influence.
No, it sucks. Like, there's been this series, like this compilation that's floated around the internet for a long time. It's called Unreleased Miscellaneous, and it's just a bunch of Lucy's from Frank Ocean. It's a couple songs that maybe he put out on Tumblr. It's a couple of features that were actually like released on like actual albums. So really, like, the legality of this one is a lot more clear than other compilations, like the one that I've made. So this compilation's been around for a long time, and it has tons of variations because there isn't like one group in charge of putting this together and having like a canonical track list. So if you look on Last.fm or any of the mixtape sites, there's always going to be a different track listing. It's always different. But in recent years, some group in Germany or wherever, they started printing this on vinyl, and it's terrible because the best source for these MP3s are like 128 kilobytes per second. That is not worthy of pressing to wax. Like,
no.
Albums pressed on wax are pressed from a very specific master. Like, they get a different mix. They get a different master specifically for vinyl, so it sounds better on that than you would make it for like a CD or digital distribution. So at the very best, bootleggers will make vinyl pressings off of like a CD because you can at least get like lossless representations of the CD master, and maybe they don't sound the best, but it's not awful quality. But these Germans are releasing this awful series of unreleased miscellaneous Frank Ocean tracks, and the artwork is awful. People think it's legitimate and they buy it. I can't believe that record stores sell copies of this. I actually had a conversation with my record store guy about this and like the actual legality of it. Like, they could get in some pretty big trouble for stuff like this. But yeah, these people, they found my collection, which is different from the existing one in that I had sourced better quality. It's probably why they liked it. I sourced better quality tracks for almost everything that was in the unreleased miscellaneous. I added about 30 more tracks, and it didn't include anything that they could get in like copyright trouble for because it had been previously released on an official release or something. So It was rife for being stolen, and they did it. And now it's a 3 LP set that you can buy, and it has terrible artwork, which is based loosely on the artwork that I use for mine. And yeah, it's a little weird. But anyway, I guess what I was trying to get to is the Julia Michaels thing. I've recently started a collection of songs for her as well, because she kind of comes from interesting, sort of a similar background to Frank Ocean. Now that I think about it, she's been a songwriter for years, and as a result of that, she has lots and lots of reference tracks that have leaked out over the years. And so I already have a 35 track set of Julia Michaels rarities and Lucy's that I found and put together. I'll just keep adding to it as time goes on, because she still writes for other people. Like, she's killing it right now on her solo thing, but she writes for like Charlie XCX or something.
Those are some really good songs too. Like,
I'm not really familiar with her, but I guess they like do a lot of writing together.
You know, I don't care. You know, like, it's like very girls, like 2011, 2012.
Yeah.
That's Charlie XCX. Some good stuff. You dance to it.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So anyway, I'm excited to see some pop bands. I don't think I've ever really been to a show like the 1975 or Julia Michaels, but this should be fun.
Oh, there's a big Robin show here in New York City a few weeks ago. It was huge. There's videos of people on the subway, like after the show, just having like a dance party in the subway platform by, I think it's probably Madison Square Garden or something, but like people just raving. Like, my friend couldn't get tickets to it, so he bought tickets to DC and just went down to DC to see Robin play.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. Just nice to see people dance on the subway, you know, not peeing on it.
That is nice. Do you see that video of Hozier singing in the subway?
Aaron sent it to me. I definitely did not watch the video, though, because I just don't want to see that guy sing.
No?
I think he's talented. I like some of his stuff.
Tone.
But it's just, is very much like almost a parody of himself in, in like looks and what and his music is like.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it helps that, like, I mean, he came out on the scene and then all the Mumford and Sons stuff kind of came around and it kind of it drowned him out a little bit. He had that
very
big
talented. Yeah, his song Exploder was really excellent. I really enjoyed hearing him talk about writing that song. Mm-hmm. But it, it's just a it's a very
The Mumford one was really good too.
Yeah, they recorded that at HeadGum.
That's right. You mentioned that. That's so cool. That was a great episode. Yeah.
And then I hit up our Slack. I hit up the company Slack and I was like, "Hey, we got a shout out in Song Exploder." Like, "Huh? For what?" And I was like, "What else? Like, they recorded it at your studio." Like, they're like, "Oh yeah, I remember that." And I was like, "What the fuck? Like, nobody really partnered with you guys on this."
I didn't
Somebody
know that
Mumford and Sons just walked into your studio and recorded an interview. Like, what the fuck?
I didn't know that Saoirse Ronan was in a Hozier music video. That's kind of cool.
Who's that? Is that a Game of Thrones character?
No, she's a real life human being who is in the movie Lady Bird.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And Hannah, as I'm learning. They already made it into a TV show.
Uh-huh.
I feel like I'm going to watch the movie first and then the TV show, but I don't know which is the right one to do.
Oh, watch the movie.
Watch the movie first? Okay.
Yeah. I watched the end of the movie. I don't know anything about I mean, I've seen like previews for the TV show. I've not watched it. I intend to, but watch the
movie. It just got the cast of The Killing. Did you ever watch The Killing?
No.
Aaron and I were watching the trailer for the new Hannah show, and it's just got the woman from The Killing and it's got the man from The Killing. And we were just like, is this a sequel to The Killing? And then it just goes Hannah. And I'm like, wait, there's a movie with that name. And I look it up. It's like, yes, this is a movie based on, this is a show based on the movie with characters from a show that were on another show together that has nothing to do with this, but sort of looks similar because it's in the woods and there's guns and a woman chasing people.
What's the show called? The Killing?
The Killing.
It was, when was this? Like 2011?
It was like when Breaking Bad was in its final seasons. I think it was okay. AMC was really pushing it. It jumped from AMC to some other channel. And then I think to Netflix, it was definitely moved around, like canceled and revived a couple times, I think.
All right. But, I just did one of those IMDb collaborator searches.
Yeah.
You know, the ones where you can like put in two shows and see what actors they share.
Yeah.
And there are three and yeah, no, there are two.
The lead. Two, yeah, that's what I mean.
Okay, just the two?
Yeah, just that's the ones we identified. It's okay. The woman with red hair who plays what's her name? I can't think. Villain from Thor Ragnarok. I can't remember her name.
Is it Mirelli Enos? Enos?
Well, that's the woman. That's the
is that what I said?
No, I'm saying the character that that woman is playing, but her movie equivalent, the actress. I'm trying to.
You're trying to figure out what her character's name is
in the movie. No, I'm trying to figure out the actress who plays that character in the movie. Like, this is the most roundabout way of trying to point out who I'm talking about. It's just I'm just going to go to the IMDb. But yes, it's the guy from Altered Carbon and House
Joel
of Cards
Kinnaman. He's showing up everywhere now.
I'm glad. I'd like to see him in more. I'd like to see him as a leading, like in a leading role, like actually, like doing some like.
We have though. Altered Carbon wasn't good. I think he's really boring. I'm sorry. I don't like him.
In Altered Carbon.
I couldn't get past the first episode of Altered Carbon.
I think it's worth pushing through. We've already talked about that, but his acting was very stylized in Altered Carbon. I don't think that's a good example of what I want him to do.
He had a lead in an action movie in 2014. The movie was called RoboCop, and it was terrible.
Some people liked it.
Agree to disagree. I don't know. I think he's fine.
Well,
I think
he was playing
potential.
A RoboCop, no?
Yeah, he was playing a RoboCop.
So, like, I want to see him acting like a human. Like, in Altered Carbon, he's like a time-traveling...
Do you know the story of RoboCop?
He was a human, and then he becomes a robot.
And he fights crime.
I'm familiar. I've seen RoboCop. The original.
I see Joel Kinnaman, and I see him as sort of, maybe this isn't
his
fair,
head's,
but
his head is really small for his body. It's weird.
He's like a knockoff Michael Fassbender.
Yeah, I actually, what's the Fassbender from Mute? The one who's just like the Fassbender we don't talk about.
Is there more than one Fassbender?
Oh, yeah. No, there's so many. I feel like there's multiple Fassbenders. Look up the movie Mute. It's the lead in the movie Mute. It's one of the Fassbenders.
Is he related?
Shoot, I'm thinking of Skarsgård. I'm a fucking idiot.
Yeah,
that's why.
Skarsgård. Yes, there's the Skarsgård.
What is a Fassbender? Who's a Fassbender?
Michael Fassbender. He plays like David and Walter in the Prometheus
movies.
I
totally know who we're talking about, but for some reason I thought his last name was Skarsgård. How many Skarsgårds are there?
There's a few.
Let's look at all the Skarsgårds. We got an Alexander, who is... Okay, that's not the Skarsgård. I know Stellan Skarsgård, who is Professor Lambeau from Good Will Hunting.
Uh-huh.
That's the only Skarsgård I really care about. But there's
Bill
a lot of Skarsgårds.
Skarsgård is the creepy clown from It.
Yeah. There's only one Fassbender. Yeah. There's a Chris Fassbender from Toon Life Dating. Don't want to talk about that.
Mm. I don't know him.
Yeah, there's a lot of Fassbenders, but none of them are famous.